This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, producer Tom, push that button.
What's trending in Seattle?
So something crazy happened yesterday, and it's kind of weird because I fully expect that this happens all the time, and maybe we just don't hear about it. And yet, in this case, we're hearing about it. A crazy dude threw a no parking sign into the window of Beth's Cafe in Seattle. He's yet to have been caught.
But have been seriously injured.
So that's Chantel Hagerman. She's a manager over at Beth's Cafe. And she tells Cairo 7 TV that it happened early Sunday morning after someone in a group was told to leave because he was acting a little bit too aggressive.
He started throwing a fit and then sat outside and waited patiently for his friends to come out.
So that's kind of weird. They kick the one dude out, but the friends stay and complete their meal. I suppose I've been there.
They like the friend group better than they like that guy.
But then the friend group started to act out. And again, I'm assuming because of the timing of all of it, there maybe had some alcohol to do with it. Maybe they were drunk and you're going to Beth's Cafe afterwards. So then they start acting out. They were then asked to leave. One of them threw the sign into the window before they left. It sent glass towards the people who were there eating. It was chaos.
Definitely shooken. And I think a little scared and frightened.
So then surveillance video shows the guy getting in a car, hitting a parked car behind him, and then taking off. Again, presumption, probably booze had something to do with it. They gave Seattle police the car's license plate, but no arrests have been made as of yet.
He damaged our property. This is like our home, and he damaged our home.
Who among us hasn't drunkenly done the exact same thing? I preach every day about acceptance and tolerance, and sometimes you just act out and,
throw a sign through a window.
Yeah. Aren't you legitimately wondering why we don't hear more of this? I guess, I assume when you're talking about drunk people in the middle of the night, going out, you know, trying to sober up a little bit before they get home after going to, you know, bar hopping, whatever, I just assume that more of this happens. And I'm actually pleasantly surprised that it doesn't, or at least if it does, it's not getting that much attention.
Well, they confine it to the tent encampment. So that's where it really happens.
But what is it? What is it about going out? Because I've certainly gone out in my younger years, and you know, you go to bars, you get a little inebriated, and then you go to like the IHOP or the Denny's, or in this case, Beth's Cafe, and you do weirdly act semi-normal for someone who's completely sloshed. Because I've been at these places in the middle of the night, and certainly other people show up after going to bars. They're also drunk, and you know, they're ordering the pancakes and eggs and sobering up a little bit. And they always seem to act normally. I'm surprised by that. And well, maybe I shouldn't be, but people are maybe not as bad as I think.
Because the goal is to act like you're not drunk, both for yourself and others. You want to convince everyone that, yeah, you're cool. You're not going to go stumbling into the bar, stumbling into chairs.
You're weirdly aware of the consequences of being too overtly drunk at the Denny's or the Beth's Cafe, and so you're under
avoid getting kicked out.
Yeah, it's super. It doesn't quite make sense in my head the way that it all unfolds, and yet I guess most people are like that. These people obviously excluded from that, you know, that conversation. These people are bad. Hopefully they catch them. I can't imagine it's going to be that hard to find the person if you've already got the license plate and video of the individual going into the car. That seems kind of open and shut for the cops to figure out. So hopefully they will.
Yeah. Probably someone with a pretty strong arms to get that sign through the window.
How did he pull the sign down?
I'm thinking like one of those sandwich board signs. That's what I was thinking.
They didn't show an image of I was thinking in my head like a posted one of the metal pieces on the pole. You're thinking sandwich board? I like my idea better because it shows a level of strength that makes him almost like a superhero. Or
maybe he was bit by a bat.
Just saying. Full circle on that one. Let's find out what else is trending. Right now.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, two anti-Semitic congresspeople, they acted out in a more anti-Semitic way over the weekend when they decided after being denied the ability to travel to Israel because it's against the law for them to admit people who are trying to, you know, destroy the state of Israel, which is what both Tlaib and Omar have been doing by supporting a boycott with the BDS movement. They did something that they probably should not have done if they're hoping to gain some type of sympathy from a public that isn't all that engaged in the day-to-day goings on of people like this. They posted on their Instagram, they both did it at the same time, they posted a cartoon from a noted anti-Semite and Holocaust denier by the name of Carlos Latif. Carlos Latif had this posting, this cartoon that he drew. And it shows Benjamin Netanyahu silencing Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman, with a hand over her mouth. And then it shows President Donald Trump silencing Congresswoman Omar with a hand over her mouth. And in the middle, just so where everyone's clear that this is about Judaism, there was a Star of David, somewhat needlessly, but okay. And in this post on Instagram, Rashida Tlaib posted a statement alongside that said, "The more they try to silence us, our voices rise. The more they try to weaken us, the stronger we become. The more they try to discredit us, the truth prevails." Well, here's the truth about what actually happened. So they were given, or at least Tlaib was given, the permission to go to the West Bank to visit her aging grandmother. And she originally asked to visit the grandmother and get a pass, knowing that she couldn't go into Israel because of the law there. She asked for an exception so that she could meet with her grandmother, and she promised that she wouldn't engage in any kind of talk of boycotting Israel, anything that would lead to the destruction of the state that she loathed so much. And then after it was granted, she decided to come forward and pretend that, "Oh, well, you know what? I'm the victim here. They're just trying to get in my way, and I can't allow the oppression of, you know, the state of Israel to, as much as I love my grandma, I just can't allow myself to be used in that way." She set this up. She set it up. And of course, the consequence of the setup is making Israel look bad, which is exactly what an anti-Semite would do. This is being driven by her anti-Semitism. She is anti-Israel. Yes, you can be against a policy of Israel and not be an anti-Semite. People will often put that out there and say, well, so you're not allowed to criticize Israel? No, you can certainly criticize Israel. It's about the way you criticize Israel. It's about using anti-Semitic tropes about Jews constantly. It's about not just believing that Israel doesn't exist and doesn't have a right to exist, which should, in your mind, be a very clear red flag of being an anti-Semite. It's having a map of Israel in your office and then covering Israel with a post-it note that says Palestine, which does not actually exist historically or otherwise. It's about constantly talking about American Jews and their quote-unquote dual loyalty, which, again, is a trope that's been used to demonize Jews. It's about not equating Jews with rich, evil people who want to buy influence, as they do when they talk about Jewish money. And it's all about the Benjamins. Oh, so she can't go after AIPAC and the money they spend to lobby? No, she can. She can. I probably wouldn't do it with "it's all about the Benjamins, baby," but it seems like she's only going after Jewish lobbying money. It seems like she's not actually going after any particular policy of Israel. When you call out and support the BDS movement, which exclusively blames Israel for all of the problems in the region, when you sympathize and or side with Hamas, an actual terrorist organization, that's not simply calling out the state of Israel's policies. I'm not entirely sure I know what policy they even have an issue with. They believe, because they don't know what apartheid actually means, they believe that Israel is an apartheid state. They believe that Israel is an oppressive regime going after Palestinians. Of course, it's always fun when you're talking about a progressive perspective on this, where the people they're defending, the government they're defending, stones gay people and women to death. Simply because someone might be gay. Simply because someone might be a woman and shows her face in public. These are the people. This is the government infrastructure that they're standing up for. They'll go after Israel, a common issue that people like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and anti-Semites all across the region and country take and globe, is that Israel is a state that practices pinkwashing, meaning that they pretend to support LGBTQ issues only to mask the human rights abuses that they're doing against the Palestinian people. There's no truth to that, of course. And when you go after the country in the region, the only one in the region that actually respects LGBTQ issues, when you go after them and not the literal government regimes that will murder you for being gay, where it's illegal to be gay, kind of shows your hand a little bit, don't you think? Just like a little bit kind of shows your hand. They support any policy that weakens Israel because they're anti-Semites. I will gladly have conversations with people in good faith who take issue with a particular policy, because I'm going to assume I don't agree with all the policies of the Netanyahu administration or the Israeli government. Totally accept that I'm going to find some disagreements on issues. When they want to have that conversation, I'll happily have them on here and we'll happily talk it out. But they're not, because they're more angry that Israel exists than a policy is in place. That's really what this is about. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to my latest blog showing you just how bad the situation is at parks in Seattle. We've completely given them up to the homeless. There is trash everywhere. But in particular, I want to highlight an issue at a park in Shamasawan's district. If you want to see how badly socialism treats the district that she represents, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my story. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
So Seattle must be the only city that openly says we support binding arbitration. That's only binding when we agree with the decision from the arbitrator. We talked about this breaking news story when it happened on Friday. Seattle Police Union is now going to appeal officially a judge's decision to overturn an arbitrator's decision to let a cop keep his job. The officer, Adley Shepard, had been fired for punching a woman in handcuffs. That was after she kicked him in the face, resisting arrest. They went through binding arbitration. The arbitrator found on the side of the cop, saying that firing Adley Shepard was a step too far, that it didn't warrant that. The city decided, oh, well, you know, we have a federal judge that's mad with us about the consent decree, and he's given us a hard time over this. And we've got a lot of community activist groups that don't like the fact that he used violence. So we're just going to go after this cop and fight tooth and nail to make sure that he's fired. Rich O'Neill with the Seattle Police Officers Guild. That's the union. He's saying this is absolutely ridiculous.
That was unprecedented. It just doesn't happen. And the reason it doesn't happen is because our contract says that arbitrations will be final and binding.
What is the point of having binding arbitration if it's not actually binding? Why are we calling it binding arbitration? Why doesn't the city of Seattle just say, we'll agree with anything that an arbitrator comes out with so long as we like the decision? That would at least be a little bit more honest. Now, this is happening, by the way, at a time where police officers feel like this city does not have their back. And you've got not just the mayor and Jenny Durkin, who's not necessarily a friend to this police unit here, all the cops here. You've got Chief Best, who's been sending some mixed messages. We talked about the story last week exclusively on this show where she decided to fire a cop who was dealing with depression, and it turns out PTSD. He was self-medicating with marijuana. Smoking marijuana off-duty as an officer is against their rules, so she decided to fire him. That seems like a huge step too far, especially since we know, those of us who cover the situations with the Seattle Police Department, there are some cops who have clearly done much worse than that, still working, showing up to the job inebriated. And they still hold their job. So why did it happen there? Now, obviously, in this case, Adley Shepard is pissed. Understand that he decided to punch her one time, to subdue her because she was resisting arrest and she physically assaulted him. In sturdy boots, she kicked him right in the face. It was all caught on video.
You're escalating this by...
Kicks.
Kicks me.
She clearly kicks him. And she got away with it. In fact, in all of this, the victim here is actually Adley Shepard, who was now fired. Now, he was on the show. He spoke with us exclusively. And he's pretty pissed off with what the city's doing to him.
They just don't understand what I was dealing with, and they don't understand what officers deal with on a regular basis. Just by the city just using my, you know, my name and this incident as their, you know, strategic, you know, whatever they're doing. It's like they're wearing my name out. And I'm getting blamed for everything that happens in Seattle.
Part of this is clearly political. The city is trying to get away from this federal judge who found them out of compliance, and they pointed specifically to this. The judge does not believe that this should go through binding arbitration. He says that that's not okay. But here's the deal. The city of Seattle, with the police officers union, they agreed that that's the system that they're going to adhere to. It's not Adley Shepard's fault that they don't want to adhere to their own policies and that a judge doesn't like it.
Jenny Durkin, she came in here with an agenda, first and foremost. The assault in me is the only assault in an SPD, an assault on an officer, was never investigated. I filed an OPA complaint 2.5 years ago asking why the investigation was, mm-hmm. Why the assault on me was not investigated. And it's been delayed and held up. And Andrew Meyerberg, the now OPA director, he was the city attorney at the time who handled the tort case. And now he's in that position. He took the case away from the chief for like 5 months. And I'm still waiting. Like, hey, why am I the only officer in SPD who was assaulted and investigation is not complete?
They're not backing their cop here. This is part of the reason why so many officers are leaving the SPD. They do not feel backed by this city. And this is yet another example to validate their feelings, to validate their concerns. If you want to listen to that exclusive interview, you can listen on the podcast. It was on Friday's show. You can text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. You can go to ktth.com or just search for the Jason Ranch Show wherever it is you download your podcast. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So the economy is going to slow down. History tells us the economy is going to slow down. There's no way around it. It cannot continue to do as well as it's doing forever and ever and ever. Unfortunately, Democrats want the slowdown to take place, and they're hoping that it falls into a full-blown recession. Some people are actively rooting for it because they know that it's going to hurt President Donald Trump's re-election campaign if they can get the economy to slow down around the time of the 2020 election. So they're going to start to up the ante of their rhetoric because markets can be spooked very easily with a lot of people saying one thing. And so as a result of that, you've got the president's team coming out, and I think they're doing the opposite, which is really severely downplaying what they know is going to happen to the economy. And they do this. It's smart strategy, right? Smart strategy. You don't want to tell people that the economy is going to slow down. You want to talk up the economy as much as possible because as easily as the economy, as the stock market can be spooked, well, it can also be inspired. And so Larry Kudlow is out there. He's the director of the National Economic Council. And he was on with NBC to say, there's not going to be a recession. Just stop.
Well, I tell you what, I sure don't see a recession. We had some blockbuster retail sales consumer numbers towards the back end of last week. Really blockbuster numbers. And in fact, despite a lot of worries with the volatile stock market, most economists on Wall Street towards the end of the week have been marking up their forecast for the third and fourth quarter. That echoes our view. You know, what we've got here, consumers are working at higher wages.
Right.
They are spending at a rapid pace. They're actually saving also while they're spending. That's an ideal situation. So I think actually the second half of the economy is going to be very good in 2019. No, I don't see a recession. And
now, to bolster, by the way, the position of the White House is some really promising news. Among 226 economists surveyed by the National Association for Business Economics, 24% said a recession would hit in the U.S. in 2021, which is, yes, an increase from 25% who believed it was going to happen once they asked in February. But this new survey that was released revealed that fewer economists expected a recession to begin this year, only 2%, down from 10%. So politically speaking, the good news is if we are going to hit into recession territory, it's likely not going to happen during the 2020 election, the re-election campaign. What this, however, does mean is that Democrats are going to do whatever they can to get to that recession point faster. They're actively going to try to get to that point much faster. That's bad news for all of us. Their hatred of the president is so severe that they want to see people out of work as a result. But the takeaway for you guys at home, especially for those of you, that's why we're proud to be sponsored by the Online Trading Academy. The takeaway for you should be that the economy is going to slow down. The Trump administration is going to mitigate as best as they can, so it's not a full-blown recession. But you've got, at the same time, Democrats who want that to happen, so you need to be prepared. Ask yourself if you're prepared. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770, KTTH, and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. Antifa took on so-called Nazis, though really they are just members of a variety of alt-right groups that Antifa pretends are actual Nazis, to justify their violence and their bullying, something they attempted to do with my next guest, who was down there covering the protests. Julio Rosas is with the Washington Examiner, and he joins me now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, great to be here.
So take us through exactly the way you were confronted a number of times by Antifa protesters.
So basically what happened was there was these two counter sides, and I was on the Antifa side. And at one point, there was an individual who was being aggressive with just about anybody that wasn't on their side, and that included me. And I had markers on my person saying that I was a member of the press, and he came up to me, and he started yelling at me, started accusing that I was spying for the other side. And up until that point, none of the other Antifa protesters had paid much attention to me. But it was after he started yelling at me, at that point, a group of them started to also yell at me, telling me to leave. And they started to surround me. And so I had to continually back up in order to avoid being completely surrounded. And then probably about 30 seconds later, a police officer came and took me aside, saying that, you know, he wanted to defuse the situation. I explained to him I was here as press. I was not a member of the Proud Boys. And they said that they couldn't guarantee my safety if I continued to be on that side of the road. And so eventually I had to make the decision in order to still do my job to move over to across the street.
Of course, no real meaningful coverage over the threat to journalists like yourself coming from Antifa, coming from the media, right? I mean, generally we hear about the rhetoric coming from the president and how it's making it impossible for journalists to do their job safely. And yet this is the kind of thing that happens routinely with Antifa protests. I've been at some of these protests where I've covered it as a talk show host, and they follow you, the members of Antifa.
Yes. Yes.
How did you feel?
It was a little concerning. I've covered a lot of protests, a lot of Antifa protests in the past. Usually it's been in a local area, whether here in D.C. or out in Virginia. So I usually had somebody else with me, whether it's a friend at another outlet or just, you know, just general, you know, people that are other members of the press. But I was by myself out in Portland. And so I certainly had to definitely keep aware of my surroundings. And so that's why, again, in order to avoid being completely surrounded from these Antifa protesters, I had to unfortunately go to the other side and report from there.
What did you see? What did you experience there as far as the actual intent of the protests?
So, like I said, there were definitely a lot of individuals who were there ready to fight. They were saying that we're not here to talk. We're here to bang it out. There wasn't much confrontation between them and the large group of the Proud Boys because, like I said, the police were keeping them separate. There were a few individuals who were either were wearing American flag T-shirts or, you know, having patriotic attire get accosted throughout the day. And then there's even some individuals that I saw who appeared to be just curious passerbys, mm-hmm. Being forced out of the park and with Antifa calling them Nazis. And like I said, these individuals appear to not be on either side. They just appear to be just curious bystanders.
And to be clear, it certainly seems that both sides were looking for some kind of fight. Usually the members of the right wing side, they go there ready to defend themselves, and they usually try to provoke some sort of situation where they can legally defend themselves. Antifa seems to be outwardly aggressive in throwing the first punch or throwing the first rock, as it were. Is that generally what you saw as well?
So, like I said, I wasn't able to see much of the Proud Boys because they were separated. And then they were only, you have to keep in mind, they were only there for about an hour and a half, give or take. And a lot of them left. And Antifa stayed out long into the day, and they went out into the downtown areas, and they caused a lot of disruptions.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, they were attacking people who they perceived to be Nazis, even though I myself did not see them wearing any Nazi attire. The Proud Boys are very, very much a group that wouldn't mind throwing a few punches at Antifa, and they are choosing Portland specifically because of the large concentration of Antifa in that city. So it's certainly a little bit of provocative on their end as well.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Julio Rosas from the Washington Examiner. If you want to check out his work, by the way, WashingtonExaminer.com. He was down in Portland covering the Antifa riots or rallies, I suppose, in Portland on Saturday. How were the cops doing there? I saw certainly reports showing that they were out there in full force, but it seems like they kind of disappeared from time to time.
Yes. So when the Proud Boys were present, the police presence was pretty heavy. However, when the Proud Boys left across the bridge, a bunch of cops just packed up and left. However, they were kind of acting as what I would equivocate to the quick reaction force. So whenever Antifa would go out into the streets or whenever they would have a confrontation with individual people, they would dismount from their vehicles and move in and try to separate. But with that tactic, they were kind of playing catch up throughout the day. And so they weren't able to be present in every single confrontation just because there were so many members of Antifa out on the town. A lot of them were in the park, but I mean, there was over 1,000 of them,
mm-hmm.
I'd say, on the Antifa side, and they just spread out and into the city.
So based on how the media has covered this outside of the work you're doing for the Washington Examiner, do you think the media is covering the rallies fairly? Do you think they're missing a key part of this?
I mean, in fairness, like I said, there was just a lot of them, and they were spread all over the place. So obviously the media can't be everywhere whenever there's a fight. And so, but I think they really need to focus on the fact that members of Antifa, they're a hammer in search of a nail.
Yeah.
And they view a lot of people who aren't necessarily said nail as something to hit, which is unfortunate. And I myself kind of received the end of that, you know, like I said, because they thought I was a spy for the other side, and they were accusing me of being a Nazi. They accused me of being a sympathizer and instigator when I was literally just standing around. So I think a lot of effort on the media needs to document that and just say, hey, this is what happened. It was a big rally. There's a lot of people there, so I understand that they can't be at every single instance whenever there is something happening. A lot of the video that we saw was from independent freelancing reporters, which is good, but I think that the national media needs to, dedicate themselves. And I'd also like to say that the local station out in Portland was on the scene, but to show as an example of how things are, they were there with security guards. They had to come with some muscle in order to protect them. And I think that's a sad state of the city, that their own local reporters feel the need to have security with them in order to do their job.
Yeah, and the same thing is done here in Seattle with media outlets when they're covering these types of events where you'll have some security there. And what was particularly disgusting, as you know, Antifa pretends that they're out there fighting literal Nazis on the streets of Portland. You also see a lot of video, we posted it on our Twitter feed, of Antifa members calling an African-American officer a race traitor. They were screaming, all cops are bastards. That's not dismantling white nationalism. That's going after cops. And it seems that this has nothing to do with literal Nazis, in their words. It has everything to do with anyone who seems to maybe get in the way or even question some of their political beliefs.
Yeah. Yes. And I saw one Antifa protester yell at an African American officer, you know, hey, Uncle Tom, where's your cabin? So these people are definitely not nice to anybody that's not their own at bare minimum.
It was pretty disgusting what was on display. I'm glad you're okay. If you want to follow Julio, just go to Julio_Rosas11. In fact, if you just go follow me on Twitter, I'll send a retweet right now, and you'll be able to follow Julio and see what it is he saw. Julio Rosas works with the Washington Examiner, WashingtonExaminer.com. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Monday. You know what the worst thing in the world is? Getting into an Uber and having a chatty driver. Just the absolute worst. Because I get into the car, I just like, just take me home. Just don't bother me. I don't care how your day was. I will certainly ask you how your day was and make very small chit-chat because I want to get a five-star review once you drop me off. But beyond that, don't want to know about your day. And then I see the story from an Uber drive in Buffalo, New York. It's gone viral. And if I was in the position this person is in, this story would be very different. It would go viral still, but probably for different reasons. So Lamaya Jabbar, she was in her car with the Uber driver. Doesn't say where exactly they were going. And she learned a little bit about the driver. She gets picked up. She's on her way to work at Tim Hortons. And on the way from the woman's house to her job, she started opening up to this Uber driver. And of course, this Uber driver, very chatty, so talks back. And she learns that this woman in the backseat of the car, she has been struggling a little bit financially. She's a grandmother. She takes care of the grandkids. And as a result of that, she can't necessarily take care of herself. And it sucks because she's been wanting a new dress for church. Plus, she says for Christmas, she can't wait. She hopes she can get a robe and house shoes. I'm not entirely sure I know what house shoes are, other than shoes you wear in the house to do chores.
Slippers, maybe.
Okay. That's a look at you, privileged woman. Go barefoot like the rest of us. But that's what she wants. And so Jabbar, this driver, she felt really sorry for this girl, but also this woman, but also inspired to help. So she ends up buying a dress for her to use at church, as well as a gift card so that she can buy the robe and the dress shoes, or the dress, what is it called? The church shoes or the house shoes, whatever. And she, of course, she films handing the gift over to the woman while she's at Tim Hortons, which is a drive-thru play, a coffee shop. And at first, clearly the grandmother has no clue who this woman is. She has no recollection of the conversation they had literally that day.
Hello. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
You remember me, Diane?
Yes, I think so, honey. Right now, I don't know. I probably do.
So this is right at the drive-thru. So she's like, lady, I got to do my work. I can't have these conversations with you. No, I don't remember, but, you know, I'll pretend just because I want to be a nice person.
Diane, so this morning I gave you an Uber ride to work.
Oh, yes.
And we had a conversation earlier.
Yes, yes.
She's like, oh, I remember you. I gave you one star because you were so chatty. You were asking me about my day and my struggles, and then I had to open up with you, and it got really awkward. Oh, God, you're so annoying. Yeah, what do you want?
And you said that you was waiting for Christmas so that you can get house shoes and some other stuff, right?
Yeah.
All right, so you don't got to wait till Christmas, okay? So I bought you a dress.
Oh, my God.
Here's the dress.
Oh, thank you. Because
you
so
said you
much,
needed
honey.
Something to wear to church. Those are probably the people behind me.
Oh,
but that's your dress so you can wear it to church.
Oh, if you're so sweet.
If you don't like it, the gift receipt is in there. It's from Old Navy.
Oh,
and then here's a $50 Visa gift card.
Oh.
So you
oh
can
God.
Take that and get your house shoes and your robe when it's time, okay?
Thank you so much. This has been such a horrible day. You just made my whole day so much better.
I'm not crying. You're crying. I'm definitely not. I'm not crying. Okay. Can we stop filming these things
yes.
in such a self-serving way? You
my
know,
gosh.
You know what would have been really awesome? If there was no video of this whatsoever, but we just happened to find out from the woman who works at Tim Hortons, from the grandmother who comes out and says, you know what? If she wants to come up with a video, awesome. I was having a really bad day. I opened up to my Uber driver, and all of a sudden, my Uber driver showed up. You never believe what happened. She showed up to work. And she gave me the dress that I was talking about. It didn't fit, so I had to return it. And it's actually become a really big deal because I had to take an Uber to the store to return the dress. And that cost me like $17. So really, I'm actually losing money at this point. But it's the thought that counts. That's different. When you film yourself doing something great, I feel like you should lose some points. Because it almost feels like at that point that you're only doing it for the attention, for the kudos.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of cheapens what normally would just get me to just bawl like a little baby.
It does.
It's no. Right. It just cheapens the whole thing. And I immediately thought, what was the purpose of filming this? I mean, realistically, what's the purpose of this? She wants to post it on social media, and people won't say, oh, this woman's story, this grandmother's story is really, really sweet. No, it's, oh, my God, you will never believe what my friend Jabber did, or Jabbar, or whatever her name is. Oh, my gosh, you will never believe. It's just wrong to me.
Mm-hmm. Plus, if you look through their Instagram, and out of the thousands and thousands of videos, photos they post, there's one video of them doing something like this. If you're doing this every week and you're filming it, okay. If you're
like,
doing
maybe
this
that was your gimmick, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. But no. And it's the same thing when professional athletes go and play with, you know, little kids from an elementary school or at the children's hospital and they're filming it and taking pictures.
If someone else is filming it, awesome. That's fantastic. But if you're doing it, it feels like the sentiment's not there, that this is all about growing your own brand and trying to go viral.
Well, remember we talked about Tyler Lockett, the Seahawks, doing that one time. He didn't tell anyone.
Someone at the I think it was Children's Hospital that he went to.
Something like that.
And which is weird, because if he got behind it, I probably would have remembered what it was. But someone who just happened to be there at the moment sent out a tweet or an Instagram or something to say what Tyler Lockett was doing. And I remember that story, too, of like, no, good for him. No indication that he did this just for the personal branding of it. Now, again, I'm not dismissing what it meant to the grandma, who I'm assuming is still delighted right now that this had happened and she likes the attention. She was having a crappy day and someone made her smile. Push that aside. Why are we doing this just to tell people how good we are? This is part of what social media does to all of us. It turns us into total monsters. We're even monsters when we do good things. Because if it was not for her Twitter feed or her Instagram account, well, this was an Instagram video. So If it wasn't for Instagram, would she have done this exact same thing? I bet you she would not have. And weirdly, I feel like a bad person for vocalizing this, for expressing that. I mean, I am a bad person, but not for this reason, I don't think. I think I'm in the right here.
Right, that's just one of the things, and I'm on that train, too. It's, you know, I've done nice things before, and I didn't film myself.
That's a lie.
That's not true. One time I picked up a pencil off the ground that someone dropped. So take that
I once told a woman who was about to step on a dead bird, there's a dead bird there, don't step on it. Or no, it was a cat, excuse me.
Gosh, you're a saint.
And she walked around it.
You're a saint.
I saved that woman's life and her shoes. I'm a hero. I didn't film it, though. But if I had my phone out at the time, I probably would have. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.